Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
We're broadcasting from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. I hope you are enjoying the evening so far. What? Stop looking at me like that.
I'm enjoying it.
we got like a gaggle of technical difficulties tonight.
Yeah.
And I've just exposed them all, so you will know the better.
Fortunately, we're professionals.
You're going to enjoy what we like to call the group. We only have one camera working shot tonight. And so good luck to you. For heaven's sakes. There's big stuff coming up on the show tonight. Ben, what's the toll?
All right, so we're continuing on in our GodIsImaginary.com excursus through the 50 proofs that this man has that he believes makes God imaginary. And this week we're looking about number 36, which is realize that God is impossible. And I said last week that I may perhaps have some sympathy for this argument. So we'll walk through it and see if that maintains itself.
Okay, good.
So we're going to walk through that. Mike, sounds like we're talking about some having trouble staying, serving others with a good heart.
Yeah, we're going to get into this thing, but my wife is involved they started a clothes, like they collect clothes, baby clothes and mama clothes, and they collect them. And people say, hey, look, I got some extra. So they go pick them up from them. And then they say, who needs them? Someone will say, I need them. And then they drive them out. Right? So it's basically the Goodwill without having to pay any money. And you don't have to go pick it up. They're going to deliver it to you. Whatever. I really think they did a great thing. And they got God's heart behind it. Right?
But
like the people involved, like sometimes she looks at me and says, hey, here's what's going on. And I can't grab the heart of Jesus on some of these situations to save my soul. And so we're going to run through a couple of situations that I've seen here lately and see what you guys say, because I have a very hard line, a hard time deciphering where my tolerance for love stops. You know what I'm saying? Like if I think people are taking advantage or outright stealing, and they're like, well, 70 times 7, you just give and give and give. And I'm like, yeah, it's true, but like, now you're not only stealing from me, you're stealing from whoever was supposed to get the stuff, you know? And so anyway, I have a hard time grabbing the heart of Jesus on this thing. And so I figured we'd chew through a little bit and see where we end up.
I'm pretty sure there's probably a reason people like you and I are not in charge of ministries that are benevolently helping people.
You know, that's the thing. It's like I have nothing but the heart to see people, in need, get things. And but like as soon as I think that you're fraudulent, I'm done. Like, I lose.
Exactly.
I can't turn my head, and I'm like, because then I want to investigate it.
Yeah.
Tonight I suggested they set up a sting.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to be part of it. I was going to hide, and I was going to follow somebody, and I was going to spy. And I'm like, we should do a sting,
I'm in.
and so I thought, this is not the heart of Jesus. We're going to have to talk about this thing and see if we can't get at least a dude's point of view or see whether I should just stay away from it.
I'm pretty sure you and I will be kicked off the island.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think they ended up doing the right thing, but I would not have. And thought, I'm a poor spiritual leader in my house. I can't say what the right thing to do is because I just don't see it, So anyway, we're gonna run through that. We got some Dear Life from the Path. People have questions, Ben.
They do. Now you look around and you see the news and you're like, I think things might be turning around, but that's not the case. The world is in the toilet, and people are swirling down with it. And they say to themselves, man, I could use some help. Who might be able to help me? Is those well-sweatered fellas at the Life from the Path. And so they've written in, and they need our help, and I think that we're gonna do our best.
Yeah, now I didn't get a chance. I wasn't here last week, and I missed the chance. This Pope retiring business, this is a big, hairy deal, right?
And Yeah. It's, what, it's been 600 years or
yeah.
so?
Yeah. Yeah. How long? Here's what I thought was odd. Like, I think I remember when this man became Pope. And
it wasn't that long ago.
Well, no. that's what I thought. I felt like he maybe shouldn't have taken the job. I don't know. He was old to begin with, It seems like a very weird situation, and I don't really quite know what to say about it. Like, I'm not a Pope man, right? I don't really buy into the Pope much. But I feel like he's really taking the job lightly. He's like, I'm old. I don't really feel at my best. I'll take this job anyway, and then I'm just going to retire with benefits on the way out.
I mean, you can have a pretty big difference when you start some work. And you're, say, 70-something when you begin. 10 years later, is significantly different for a guy that starts the work at 70-something than it is for a guy that starts it at 20-something and he's like, and he's 10 years down the road, you know?
True. Yeah.
They probably thought he was up to it. I frankly enjoyed it because he's saying this is an important position, and I'm not going to live it out until I die to do a crappy job just because I'm not feeling up to it.
I actually kind of respect that.
Yeah.
I hope at some point, if you know, it's time for me to go off to pasture, that I'm able enough to recognize.
I'll tell you when that time is, Dan.
It'll probably be 10 years after that.
Yeah. The Lord has given me full permission to say, you know what, Hudson, it's time for you to retire. I feel
I'm
like that
sure
sweater is the start of the end.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're broadcasting here every Monday night for the live show at livefromthepath.org. It's at 10 p.m. Put the kids to bed. Get yourself a little salsa and hang out for the live program.
Ooh.
You can do the chat, the video chat along with us. And you can hang out with us there, or you're catching us on Saturday at 7 o'clock, I don't know, 7:04, 7:09 probably, and on 99.3 KTIA, and we do appreciate you hanging out with us there, but you can check out the website during the week at livefromthepath.org and catch clips from previous shows, interviews, and you can check out our sponsors, Capanna's Coffee and Gelato, Valley Services Cleaning, the Eisenlauer team for real estate, and Jared Roy on Purpose Promotions. Check those guys out. They do great work, and they are supporting Life from the Path. And you can be happy about that as I am. So I tell you what, let's get into this proof. So this is number 36 out of 50 of the proofs that God is imaginary. And his proof number 36 is realize that God is impossible. And here's how it goes. If you consult the dictionary, here's the first definition of God that you will find. A being conceived as the perfect, omnipotent, omniscient, originator, and ruler of the universe, the principal object of faith and worship in monotheistic religions. Most believers would agree with this definition because they share a remarkably clear and consistent view of God. Yes, there are thousands of minor quibbles about religion, but that's not a full sentence, but he put a period there. Believers express those quibbles in dozens of denominations, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Catholics, Baptists, Episcopalians, Methodists, and such. Me and the daughter were looking over information about the presidents. Right, for President's Day, and we're kind of reading through, and we basically separated. They have the domination of the religion of the president, and we separated him into loves Jesus, doesn't love Jesus. And I thought, well, that's clear enough. If it's a religion that loves Jesus, thumbs up. If they don't love Jesus, thumbs down.
Weren't most of the founding fathers deists?
Now, they say that. I don't know that actually pans out. Some they get that because there's certain writings, especially from guys like
Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, from Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, that would reflect deism. There's the same writings from or different writings, but from those same guys that otherwise would reflect a creator that otherwise has influence into the world. Huh. Benjamin Franklin advocated for prayer prior to like the final passage of the Declaration of Independence, and said it would be foolish to not do so. So you know, it depends. If that's a story that they often tell. The writings make the thing a little bit more murky, even with Thomas Jefferson, who when you look at the Jefferson Bible, what they call it is he took out all the supernatural stuff. He delivered that to like an Indian chief, like a guy who he felt like the spiritual things would not meet up with him, but was good advice, and he created it for that. That's one of, you know, hundreds of Bibles that Jefferson owned and had in his library, and that was the only one that was marked up that way.
Oh.
So now, I don't know, you know, whatever. I've never met Jefferson. He could be a deist. And he could, you know, not believe in the spiritual authority of Christ. I don't know, but you just gotta be careful with that.
Where
do
I see people? They have an agenda when they're trying to tell you one way or the other. So,
you know what? Yeah. I'm tired of that jazz. Who can I trust? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, is there no one that I can get solid information from?
No.
Nope.
I have an agenda because I want you to love Jesus, and if tagging making Ben Franklin looks like he loved Jesus helps you out, I might do that. You know what I'm saying?
Come on, it's good enough for Ben. What's wrong with you?
I'm not trustworthy either.
It's also true that Burt Reynolds loved Jesus. So how do you
Just
feel
look at
about
the man's
Mark?
Hair?
And that's He's a moral staple
actually,
right there.
That's unfairly true. But like, if I find someone that I think is cool, and then I later find out they love Jesus too, I am smitten. You know what I'm saying? They love Jesus as well. These are the coolest people ever. Dang.
It does make a woman beautiful.
I'm telling you.
All right. So anyway, now believers express these quibbles in dozens of denominations. But at the heart of it all, the belief in God aligns on a set of core ideas that everyone accepts. What if you, Buva, were to simply think about what it would mean if there were a perfect, omnipotent, omniscient originator and the ruler of the universe? Is it possible for such a being to exist? Epicurus thought about it in 300 BCE, and he came up with this. The gods can either take away evil from the world and will not, or, being willing to do so, cannot, or they neither can nor will, or lastly, they are both able and willing. If they have the will to remove evil and cannot, then they are not omnipotent. If they can but will not, then they are not benevolent. If they are neither able nor willing, then they are neither omnipotent nor benevolent. Lastly, if they are both able and willing to annihilate evil, how does it exist? In other words, if you sit and think about who God is supposed to be, you realize that such a being is impossible. Ridiculous, in fact. That's also not a sentence. Take this quote from the Bible. In Matthew 7:7, Jesus says, wait, can you guess? What will it be?
It's got to be prayer, Ben.
This is memory verse for 1 year.
Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. And to him who knocks it will be open. Or what man of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to you who ask him? The impossibility of God is visible here as well. Based on Jesus' statement, let's assume that you are a child and you are starving in Ethiopia. You pray for food. What would you expect to happen based on Jesus' statement? If God exists as an all-loving, all-knowing, and all-powerful parent, a Father in heaven, you would expect God to deliver food to you. In fact, the child should not have to pray. Normal parents provide food to their children without their children having to beg for it. Yet strangely, on planet Earth today, we find tens of billions of people dying of starvation every year. Another way to approach this, the impossibility of God, is to think about the concept of omniscience. If God is omniscient, then it means that he knows every single thing that happens in the universe, both now and infinitely into the future. Do you have free will in such a universe? Clearly not. He's a Calvinist. God knows everything that will happen to you. You know that you're all a Calvinist, and you don't recognize yourself in this guy, but you believe the same thing. Therefore, the instant you were created, God knows whether you are going to heaven or hell. To create something knowing that the person will be damned to hell for eternity is the epitome of evil. Here's another way to understand the impossibility of God. If you look at the definition of God, you can see that he is defined as the originator and ruler of the universe. Why? He's using a non-biblical dictionary. Here we go. Why does the universe need an originator, a creator? Because according to religious logic, the universe cannot exist unless it has a creator. A believer will say, nothing can exist unless it is created. However, that statement immediately constructs a contradiction, because we must then wonder who created God. For a believer, the answer to that is simple. God is the one thing that does not need a creator. God is timeless and has always existed. How can it be that everything must have a creator while God must not? The contradiction in the definition of God is palpable. As soon as your think, his problem, not mine, about the concept of a perfect, omnipotent, omniscient being, you realize the impossibility of the concept. That impossibility is yet another way to see, John Buva, that God is imaginary. Tell it like it is, John. Go ahead.
So here is another instance where he uses Matthew 7:7-9, I believe it is, which he's used, I think, 5 or 6 times, just commenting on that alone. I actually read through this earlier today. I was actually one of those where it really sparked some questions in my mind, whether, you know, talking about the 3rd century, it sounds like a Greek philosopher, what he was talking about with the able and willing, able and not willing, or not able and willing.
Yeah.
And then all those 4 things.
Yep.
So I actually asked a couple people earlier with the whole benevolence thing. That kind of jumped out at me. God, we don't think ever uses the word benevolent to explain his character. And that has nothing to do with it. And here's another situation also where the concept of God and the only way that God can exist is if we live in a utopia. He believes that everything has to be perfect. No one should be dying. No one should be in pain. No one should be hurting, depressed, or in any way whatsoever for there to be a God to exist. And that just is a ridiculous notion. I think this is one of many times he's brought up that because there's hatred in the world, and because there's pain, that God can't exist. And that's something that I think is completely wrong. I mean, God doesn't promise no pain. God doesn't promise in any way that we're going to live a perfect life. God doesn't promise that this place is going to be happy-go-lucky. I mean, we're going to have a great time. That's never once said. We're promised, if we believe in Jesus Christ and you know, do what we need to do, get everlasting life, to have a safe landing, as some people say it. But we're not promised a perfect time here. And it goes along with the him being the father, and why would we have to pray for food and the starving children and everything like that. And that makes it impossible that there's starving children dying. And that's another reason why there's no God. It just seems like he's taking 5 or 6 different things that some people think is a great idea on why there is no God, and just stuffing it into one thing of God is impossible.
Yeah, he's creating God in his own image.
Right.
This man's image, saying, well, you don't meet this, so you can't be real.
Yeah, exactly. It has to fit a criteria. It has to fit a mold, or God can't exist.
Yeah, that I have decided. And yeah.
I actually think he's tagged God correctly here, to a certain extent. It was God's intention. He, when Jesus is talking, you know, look at the lilies of the field, how they grow. Did the bird not eat, right? Mm-hmm. It's God's intention that people are eating.
Yeah.
Why are people starving in Ethiopia?
Other people are holding it back.
Exactly.
From
food is, you know, the earth produces food.
Yeah.
There is food available to eat. People are starving in Ethiopia because people are keeping it from them. People aren't distributing equally the food that is available on God's earth to send to them. This is not a God problem. God is producing food. He's created a world that has food available.
What did Jesus do as he's entering Jerusalem, getting ready? He knows he's going to the cross, and he looks down over the city, and that's that famous verse where it says Jesus wept. I mean, he it's not like he's like doesn't care. You know, it's not that he's even he could with a single word fix everything, but that's not how he works. He came to fix everything by going to the cross, so we still get to choose.
Here's the thing. There's two things that I disagree with. One, the definition of God. God defines himself, and here's how he did it. I am. That's it.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah, exactly. God defines himself. He says, I am. That's all. That's it. Number two, of the three options that they gave, they didn't give the option for God, which is omniscient and benevolent. Because that's the both things that he is, right? Like, he may not have, he didn't ascertain benevolent for himself, like, according to the scriptures, right? But, like, when it says that God can either not, like, get rid of evil, what is it? What did he say? Read that one more time, Ben. Okay, the gods, gods can either take away evil from the world and will not, or being willing to do so cannot, or they neither can nor will, or lastly, they are both able and willing. If they have the will to remove evil and cannot, then they are not omnipotent. If they can but will not, then they are not benevolent. If they are neither able nor willing, then they are neither omnipotent nor benevolent. Lastly, if they are both able and willing to annihilate evil, how does it exist?
Yeah, okay, so God's the last one. He's willing and able.
Correct.
He's willing to do it. He sent Jesus to do it. That's it.
It has been.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Like evil exists, but it has been taken care of.
If now, we follow his word, all of those issues are solved. Yeah. Every one of them.
Right. Yeah, and here's the thing. Is like you can even fail at following his word. And if you put your faith in him, evil still goes away, right? Like he's not a legalist. That was the whole point of his coming into the world, right? Is to take care of the part. That's the thing. Is God imagine your man is standing on this podium that like God stop us from being ourselves, and God says I want a relationship with you, and I can't have that without letting you be yourself. I'm going to give you an out from being yourself, but I can't stop you from being yourself. Otherwise, you're not even you, right? And so that's the weird part. It's like, God, give me freedom. God, don't be a dictator. God, don't tell me what to do. I don't want to follow your rules. I don't want to do these. I don't want to do that. By the way, stop me from sinning. Stop me from being an evil person. Well, that's just about every part of you. You know what I'm saying? There's very little good in you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to kill you where you sit and move on.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that the Bible said every good and perfect gift comes from God above. That means any good in you is from Jesus.
Yeah,
and so that means the rest of you that has nothing to do with Jesus is bad.
Yeah.
And so if you say, God, stop me from doing bad, God just as well created a piece of paper and look at it.
Yeah.
Because that's your substance of you.
Yeah.
So, it's not really a proof, right? Because he's basically saying, God, why is this evil existing now? It's because you're in the world, friend, along with us.
Yeah. You know go feed the Ethiopian.
Yeah, exactly. It's atheist man and life from the path. We're in the same boat on one instance, and that's we're not Jesus.
Yeah.
Like we're just sinful people, and God's given us the out. And the only difference between us and him is we've taken it, right?
But what I think this guy does is he uses a kind of a diversion tactic. It's like he's at a zoo and he's looking at a kangaroo, and he's saying, "Wait a minute, this kangaroo he doesn't have a hard shell." He can't put his head in his shell, you know, and he's describing a turtle, which isn't a kangaroo. And he's going, see, he's not a kangaroo or he's not a turtle. And it's like, well, I mean, he's confused. He jumps all over the place.
Actually, I'm confused after listening to your example.
Exactly. That's my point. He's saying, this can't be God because, well, you're not really describing God. You're creating this image of what you think that God
should
be.
Who's Epicurus? Who is that guy? Who's Epicurus? He's a Greek philosopher.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. He's lifted up somebody on a pedestal from 300 BC, the same general time when he, like, drug everyone down and said, that, you know, these guys are dolts.
Those barbarians.
They're primitive.
The simple primitive men who couldn't have anticipated what our world would be like. That's why the Bible's false. Right.
They could have never understood the technological and sociological advances that we've
well
had.
Well-worn with the years.
But Epicurus is right.
Yeah, and of course, it's like it's a false it's a false thing. You see, like, this guy's laid out a world that fits only in these parameters, right? There's three things, and, like, either this is true, God has instituted something that said that where he is both able and willing, but evil still does exist. So obviously this whole setup is not correct. You know, there, it's the same. There's another philosophical thought about, let's say between point A and point B, there are an infinite number of steps in between point A and point B, depending on how small steps you take, right? Because, like, even if you cut it in half, you could cut that in half and cut that in half and cut that in half and do it ad infinitum, okay? So, but that doesn't mean that there's an infinity between point A and point B. You've just simply set up a circumstance in which you're measuring in halves and minuscule steps.
Okay, now listen here. Dan's examples are too dumb for me, and your examples are too smart. I'm going to need someone to put it in the middle somewhere. Troy, straighten up what Ben just said.
You're the one. It's all on you. It's a lot of pressure.
that sweater says sharp but casual.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
Okay, Goldilocks.
It's like a magic bean.
I love Jesus in the city.
Weekends and Thursday nights.
Weekends and Thursday nights. I love Jesus.
It was just weird. Like, this isn't even all that well argued that he pedestal. First of all, the dictionary is from the online dictionary, right? So it's dictionary.com. I said, well, you know, God is obviously nailed down by dictionary.com as to what he can and can't
be. Unless Webster is Jesus Christ's middle name, his definition does not count.
He's elevated a philosopher within the same realm of folks that he's torn down as being primitive and simple. A man who has postulated a circumstance of which we have a direct example of God fitting his circumstance plus, which otherwise violates his premise.
Yeah, please note the first sentence of his Epicurus example, which is the gods.
Yeah.
The gods, plural.
Zeus,
absolutely.
Hera.
He is speaking of the God of the Bible. Way to nail it.
I would say on his Ethiopia thing, that does not prove God doesn't exist.
Proves people are crappy.
He has provided, yeah, that people are the bad part here. when Adam and Eve were created, they got the run of the mill. You know, or they got the run of the place. They could eat whatever they wanted. Food was available. Even Jesus' time, he's like, you will get fed. But people are greedy. People hold back. People don't feed others. I mean, there's kids in families that starve because the dad's an alcoholic and a gambler. He has the money. He has the ability to go buy the food. The mom and the kid at home starve. That's not because God isn't benevolent, because that guy's a jerk and he's a sinner.
Yeah.
That's why. You know, put the sinner in the Ethiopian problem.
That's true. So basically what it boils down to, and that's an introspection question, right? Like, if you want to see where the rubber meets the road, you say, God, why aren't you stopping me from being me?
Yeah.
That's a hard question to answer. You want to boil down, the difference between us and his perspective. It's why is God not stopping me from being me?
Which I think ultimately will come down to the base question is why create man at all? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you create...
Now, that's a thinker.
Because the creation, I mean, we have the free will. There's love in our choice to be able to follow him or not follow him. But that leaves open the opportunity that some people simply will not. They will flat out refuse. And so the follow-up question, which is reasonable at this point, is then to say, Lord, how long will you tarry? How long will you let this continue? How long will you permit us to destroy ourselves? Right. The opposite of the question also exists. How long will you give us to submit to you? Because his benevolence, okay, his grace and his timing is also to the detriment of man as he lives in it.
You know what's funny is that for that very same reason why I like it when God says, I am sent you. Right? When the way that God answers that question, I think the way that God answers that question Ben just asked is when it's done. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's just what he says. There's a finality about God that I could fall into every time. You know what I'm saying? That I, without caution, I remember the day I read that I am verse and it blew me away. Like, it just blew me away.
Yeah, you're looking for the big explanation. You're like, really?
That's it. That's it, he says.
How do I explain that?
Yeah. I thought I should have named myself I Am, because that is the coolest name ever. I was younger. But I may not have had a right perspective of Jesus.
I was going to say, no, I wouldn't have named myself
but,
I Am.
But, like, it's his answer to that question, like, that set the tone for the whole Bible for me, is when it says, I owe you nothing, and I give you everything. Right? I Am. That's all you need.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's the kind of God that I can get on board with, right?
Yeah. His timing is sovereign. I mean, I can't even hit the green lights downtown correctly. I try to time it every day, right? I'm going to hit all these right in a row, and I get like two or three, and then I run into it, right? And I hit it. And I'm going to look at God and say, what's with the timing?
Right, come on.
Why don't you come when I think you should do it?
Come on, man.
I'm saved. Come get us.
There's benevolence.
Man. Hey, can you imagine, though, going in with a meeting to the leader of the entire globe at that time and saying, hey, God says let all of your free employees go. And he's like, says who? I am. Who's that? That's all I'm going to tell
you. That's it.
That's all you're
getting.
Figure
it out.
Yeah, see, that's where a wink does a lot more than words. You know what I'm saying? Oh. I am.
Yeah.
you listening to me?
Yeah, that's not good enough. I'm going to put this stick on the ground and watch it turn to snake. I mean,
it would be, if I were the Lord passing down this thing, and I don't like to put myself in this postulating position, but I would be concerned that Moses wouldn't pull it off right. So now, when you say I am, I mean, you've got to put some Spanish in it.
I am.
That would be cool if God's prepping him. Now, listen, Moses, don't go in there like a big Nancy. Put some boldness to you, you know?
You know what? Have Aaron do it.
Let him speak for you.
You're right.
I am? No. Stronger.
You know.
Is that like a pet food? Is that a...
I was like that. The way that reads, too, is like, I mean, it's firmly handled. He's like, did I not provide you a brother? I mean, seriously, you're in the spot where put yourself in Moses' mind, and you know that you're talking to God, right? Like you're aware of this, and you're still like, well, I don't know if I can do this thing. Like, you're going to get out of it. Like, God's going to go, well, you know, right, you're not good at public talking.
Yeah, exactly. That's not the best public speaker in Egypt. Well, okay.
We're going to go through a segment here. I'm going to see if I can rouse this up. But I keep running in my Bible studies. I keep running across what I like to refer to as the great back talkers of the Bible, right? Moses being one of them. Jacob comes up at where he's like, where he wakes up from the ladder to heaven, you know. And he's like, here's what you're going to do. If you provide me food and safe travel, then I will pick you as my God. I'm like, that's what you said? That's what you said? That's a mistake, Jacob. You know, seriously.
Samson's
bossing
him
around, telling him what to do. I'm like, what's wrong with you guys? I am, said. Just
yeah,
do
I
it.
I am.
It's crazy.
Who's the magic guy in what is it, Acts?
Bar Jesus.
Simon Bar Jesus?
Simon the sorcerer.
Yeah. Guy trying to do magic and heal people.
Yeah.
There's some real characters.
I'm
going to
get the great back talkers of the Bible. I'm going to get
it. You know, you think about Jacob, you know, it's like, okay, wrestled with God, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, if God makes a move on you, you're really going to go back? I mean, I'm like, okay,
all right.
I'm out.
All right, fine.
You know, that had been terrible, too, because it said he was up all night, right? You know God can win that at any time.
Then he finally just touches him in the hip.
He just
takes that.
Exactly. You know?
You're
He's
done.
Like, you know what? You're going to be up all night, Jacob. Because remember that time you told me you were going to pick me as my God?
You're up all night.
Yeah, let's talk.
Let's have a conversation.
You're going to limp the rest of your life.
Was he married at that point?
With the hip touch?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, he was on his way back to meet Esau.
That's right. So good luck with explaining that to your wife. When you're like, running around, I was like, honey, I don't really feel like it. I was up all night wrestling with a gun. That's what you call it, eh?
You were digging a hole.
Who won? Who do you think?
Who do you think won?
You know what? You're sleeping on that rock tonight.
Remember the one you poured oil all over? Genius.
Good luck explaining that to your kids. Oh. We just read that tonight. You know, this is they were doing the Stairway to Heaven deal and, you know, the Jacob's Ladder, you know. And so they have this picture depicted in the children's Bible. And once again, my daughter said the same thing 2 years ago, and we've just come across it again. She's like, that seems like a lot of stairs. Do you think Jesus could come pick us up in a van or something? I said, I'm sure he could. You know?
Could I have one of those fiery
Yeah, where's the
chariots?
Chariot?
Yeah, where's Elijah's chariot?
But it's like Jacob slept on a pillow and on that rock, and then they got done with the whole shebang and talking to God, and he gets up the next morning, turns the pillow upside down, the rock, and then he pours oil on it. She's like, why did he pour oil on it? I'm like, I don't know, it was a big deal back then. And she goes, my mama uses olive oil for cooking. And I'm like, I don't know everything, Grace. I'm sorry. It seems silly to me as well. I'm sure it's a big, hairy deal.
You know, maybe that's the reason. So this came up when we were talking about the Noah story last week with a different group. And so Enoch, it says Enoch walked with God, and then Enoch is just gone.
Yeah, he just disappeared.
He's just gone, right? And it also just before the flood, it said Noah walked with God. His righteousness generation, Noah walked with God. But Noah did not just get taken away. And maybe the distinction is that Enoch just took the stairs, and Noah's like, you know, forget it. I'm going to wait.
just come get me.
That's a lot of stairs. Enoch's do you like, think Jesus could come pick us up?
I think I can do that.
I'm like 900. Seriously.
Enoch was a sprightly 360.
I'm about to put Methuselah to shame. You want me to walk up all those?
I'm out of olive oil. I'm not moving.
All the pictures of that the Jacob's Ladder thing are always like, I mean, there's a bunch of angels, and they're trotting corporate style too. I mean, it's a weird interchange. Like, the Bible gives a vision of people kind of coming and going, but like, all the pictures are very world centered. Where, I mean, they're kind of trucking along down the stairs.
Exactly.
And the guy's like got a pack on. He's heading up.
You know what's the funniest part I thought about that story is, like, when Jacob wakes up from his dream, he's like, I found the entrance to heaven. Like, Jacob, you're the biggest idiot I've ever met in my life. First of all, you wear some kind of wool coat to steal your brother's blessing. You run away because you're a mama's boy. You fall asleep. God comes to talk to you and try to redeem you, and you're like, I found the entrance to heaven because I'm Jacob the Great. By the way, I'm cowering away from the lie I've told. I am A1 in God's book. He blows me away.
There's an angel. Wrestle him.
You're going down, punk.
What a redneck, man. You got sleep on this rock and wrestle that guy.
You got any olive oil in that knapsack? Biblical humor does not play during the day-to-day lives. You know what I'm saying? This is the place.
We got to get a lull out here.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well.
Okay. Wait, the final thing he said. We didn't talk about this. So the final thing he said is that God does not. It was about the need for a creator, right? That the world. Generally say that the world was created. There needs to be a beginning. It needs a creator, but God does not need one. God. No, reasonably, if you believed in the premise of what God sets himself up to be, you wouldn't have a problem with this, right? Now, but do you notice that he did skip the whole basis of the discussion? He says, why does the universe need an originator, a creator? And he says, because, according to religious logic, the universe cannot exist unless it has a creator. A believer will say nothing can exist unless it is created. So then he goes to say, well, but God wasn't created. But he didn't answer the question, is he disagreeing that something has to be created? Because, I mean, we're still at the point where something can't come from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, something had to exist. So, I mean, I see his, yes, I'm saying God didn't have to be created because he's God. I at least have an answer.
Yeah, here's right? the thing. 100% of the people are in that bucket. You know what I'm saying? Something came from nothing, otherwise the universe wouldn't exist, right?
Yeah.
It had to have, because you can't ever get something without it being created, right? And so
right.
if nothing was ever created or destroyed, everyone in the world who has put any thought into it is in that same bucket, atheist or Jesus lover alike,
yeah.
right? We both end up there. I just feel like we have a more plausible explanation, because I feel like an all-knowing, all-powerful God that created something makes way more sense to me than your magic nothing out of nothing.
Yeah.
With all the sophisticated systems, even just in a human body, but just throughout the universe, yeah, how could it possibly have just all kind of...
Why don't we ask Epicurus? He knows things.
Yeah. There's a guy who talks about
Epicurus. It's not Epicurus.
Epicurus. That's his name, isn't it?
No.
What is it?
It's Epicurus. Epicurus.
You just said it differently.
No, that's true. I know.
that's the name he got when his
you
mother was mad at
him.
You can't
argue if you said it differently because
it's
you apple, did say it differently.
It's apples or apples. It's the same.
Go ahead,
Troy. Tell about this man that you know.
Let's talk about apples. I think it's actually Louis Giglio that talks about... he understands the concept of the Big Bang, and that's a plausible thing. But you know, he thinks that there's a surprise that God made the Big Bang. The Big Bang happened with God going, and then boom, all this gravitational expansion. You know, denser elements happening, creating, expanding until we have the known universe. And I think that goes along with you saying that we're 100% in the bucket of something came from nothing, and it does make more sense with God just being there at the beginning. Of the explosion happened from him, his breath came, everything came into existence, and here we are today.
I'll buy it. I may or may not buy it.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. That was proof 36. Yeah, that's a solid God win. There's 36-0. We're getting to the tail end of these things. We got 13. Oh, well, there's some.
There's three bonus ones.
Three bonuses. All right. Ask a question in the forum. I bet that's good.
We need to go to the forum.
Watch the videos. Oh!
Nah, we're not doing that.
Okay, here we go. I'll give you a preview of next week. Proof number 37. Think about DNA. Many religious believers use the existence of DNA, or hence to forenamed Diana, as a proof for God's existence. The logic goes something like this. Diana is information. The amount of information encapsulated in a single strand of human Diana would fill 400 volumes the size of an Encyclopedia Britannica. And this information contains an exact blueprint for creating a human being. The information did not write itself. The creation of information requires intelligence. The creation of an encyclopedia requires an author, a creator. God is the creator of the information in Diana. That's it.
I agree so far. I'm the religious. I guess.
I'm him.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, we're talking about DNA next week. And that'll be proof number 37 on godisimaginary.com. You can check, you can go look through the proofs by going to godisimaginary.com, taking a peek. Here's what I would recommend doing is if you read one of those and you're like, that seems actually pretty reasonable to me. Just do a quick Google search, and then whatever your question is that he asked, type the word apologetics at the end, and good luck. You probably come across some answers that might help you out, or frankly, wait till we get to it. I mean, obviously, we're the final answer here.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I think we're pretty thorough.
We'll get this thing straightened out.
I think that man is dumb.
Proof number next. Let's do it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's all we got.
Okay, so here's the deal, fellas. So the wife is in they do curbside for kids. Okay, so basically they say, look, we're going to go pick up goods. They have a Facebook deal, and they say, who's got stuff they don't need? We'll get it where it needs to go, right? So they say, hey, let's go pick it up. So people ride in. They go pick up the baby stuff and the kids stuff and the mama stuff, and they bring it in. And then people will ride in and say, hey, I need blah, 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 8 to 12 months, blah, blah, blah. We'll take this. And they deliver it out. That's it. That's all they do. Easy. No money exchanged. It's not a nonprofit organization. It's just two ladies loving Jesus, loving up on people, right? Smooth operation. So here's what I step into. Is they said, okay, here, we're kind of coming to the tail end of our year here, and we've got some extra stuff. And so here's what we got. Who needs this, right? So they put it out there. And then the onslaught begins. And some lady's like, I'll take this stuff directly. I need this and this for like four different age groups, right? This woman only has one child. Like four different age groups. Then they get a message from this other gal that gets stuff from them, and they're like, she takes it and sells it on online baby sites. Blah, blah, blah. You shouldn't give it to her. And then the wife is telling me about this. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's what they're stealing from the free kids thing? The whole premise is loving God, loving people, serving both, right? Get them the stuff for free. People need stuff. And I'm like, let's spy on them. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to give them the stuff, and I'm going to get on their website and buy it from them, and then you're going to go pick it up and look them in the eye and say, you stole this from me. And that's what we're going to do. And she goes, that don't sound right. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what to do with it because I'm really upset, you know. And they got like the same people. They have a couple recurring people who are like, I mean, every month they're like, "What'd you get? What'd you get? I want that. What'd you get? I want that." Right?
I'm
like, got anything big?
Yeah, you got any big stuff? We got any great stuff? Because I need great stuff, you know. It's like, are you guys? I like maybe I just don't have the heart or the passion or the patience for people like that. But I'm like, can't you see what they're trying to do here? They're trying to help people who need things, right? And if you need something every single month, and they've already dumped like a bunch of stuff towards you, I feel like they've been loving and generous, and you're being selfish.
Yeah.
And I don't know where to stop that, right? Because, I mean, she asked me. She's like, I don't know what to do. Well, I take that back. She didn't ask me because she knew what I'd say. I stuck my nose in it and started saying what I would do, you know, because that's me. That's what I do, you know. And so I stuck my face in there and started saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a sting, right? But, like, where are you guys at on this thing? Like, is there – how do you steward – God's like, I mean, they're doing it. They're saying what's their slogan? Like two gals and an SUV trying to show God's love.
Right.
Right. They're doing it with God's love. They're not a nonprofit organization. They eat the gas money. They eat the time. You know right. what I'm saying? They're just doing it to love people.
I think there's a reason why even, you know, nonprofit actual real life organizations that like are food banks, they have to have boundaries because there are some people who will come every single day and eat, you know, fill their bags with groceries, whether they eat it or not, they just come and get it. And you have to have some type of boundaries for just to protect people from themselves.
And it feels like you're really squelching like the whole vibe when you're like, okay, look, you can only have one thing every 3 months because people are abusing. It's like I wouldn't want to have to do that, right? I just want to love people and give stuff away.
Look at every law we have; it's usually in place because somebody's being irresponsible.
Why doesn't God stop us
suffering.
From being evil? Tell me, atheist man. Tell me. I guess maybe I just don't have the heart for it. I'm like, ban them. That's it. They're banned. Like, one offense. You're gone. I can't take this anymore. You're trying to love people. There's 50 people out there who are involved who are giving and who are getting and giving and getting, and it's spreading the love, and it's going well. And then, like, two or three who are in there just stir the pot.
I think at some point you have to say, you know what? We've given you guys so much. We have to share this with other people. At some point, you just cut them off. You have to.
Yeah, but what's your biblical rationale there? Because like as far as the wife and I were talking, the biblical rationale is 70 times 7. Hand it over. It's not your job to judge them. Just give it to them. They say they need.
Right.
Give it to them.
You're also, like you say though, you're denying other people being helped because you're giving it to some shyster who's going to sell it or whatever. And it's like, so you're not doing your mission. If your ministry is to help people, you're not helping anybody. You're just. Other than helping someone get money, well, that's nice if you're okay with that. But you're also not helping someone who could have really legitimately used it. So at some point, you have to cut people off and say, you know what? You've reached a limit. We're sorry. We love you. You know,
I guess I'm just frustrated on their behalf because I know where their heart is on it.
Yeah.
I know what they're trying to do. And, like, I just hate to see people taking advantage of crap like that. Like, it's just absolutely – especially for what they're trying to do. Like, I mean, they're after us, mostly single mothers, you know, lower-income families. That was me growing up. Like, people did that for us. And so, like, I get the feeling. I know what that means when people show up with stuff. Like, it's fantastic. Like, it may be $3 – you know, to you, but it means a lot to the family that's getting it. And then there's people taking it and selling it on some kind of baby website. I'm like, you have to be heartless. Like, you seriously have to be heartless to be doing that to people.
Yeah.
It just blows me away, and I feel bad for the gals that you'd have to – that basically you have to start judging your charity. Like, you're not deserving of my charity, right? You made me think that when I saw you were stealing from me. Why are you stealing from me?
Right.
You know, you're stealing – and you're not even stealing from me. You're stealing from – whatever 5-year-old kid that was supposed to get that stuff. What's the matter with you, you know? I don't know. It just hurts my heart that the ladies have to even make that decision. You know, that you have to start deciding to cut people off because they're taking advantage of you, you know?
Right.
I don't know. And the problem is, I guess I come to that decision quickly. Like, as soon as I smell the hint of, I think you're feisty, like, we don't have time for that. You know, we don't have time for feisty or weirdness. You know, either take the stuff, drop off the stuff, be done with it. Should be simple.
Right.
Are we doing a sting then? I kind of like to do a sting. That seems all right.
But it's only out of a vengeful heart that I want to do a sting.
Because what are you going to do other than say, see? You know, that's
right?
You kind of lose the Christ-likeness there, I think.
That's the thing. Rebuke. I mean, that's going to do no good.
They're like, whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to give it to me?
Right.
They don't care.
Well, but if I try attempt the sting and they're not selling it, then I can keep giving them stuff. Right?
Is there any redeeming value in a Jesus sting to try to figure out what's really going on? Because some of it's conjecture, right? Like, some of it's hearsay. It could be two ladies that just don't get along with each other, trying to slander each other.
Right.
Who knows, you know? Frankly, I said don't wade into any of it and just say, look, you guys are on timeout for a month till I straighten this out. I'm not going to judge.
But you're not going to straighten out.
No.
You're not going to do a sting. You said no sting. Not going to do it.
I voted for the sting.
Dan says no.
Oh, maybe we need one of those drones.
Yeah, that's not obvious. A drone with a wig on, hovering above the doorstep. Hello.
Look at that.
Any chance you stole that stuff and are selling it on the internet?
I mean, I would vote that you're probably not using your time to the best that it could be if you're spending your time trying to, like, if you think that there's a problem, there's probably an issue. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you can say, look, it's unfortunate, but we simply don't have time to validate that. But, like, I mean, think about it this way. If it was one spiteful lady after another, she could legitimately have denied. You're now denying someone help simply off the hearsay of another lady.
That's what I'm saying.
How
do you even sort through that garbage?
It's insane. You just have to, you know, limit what you do. And I mean, if it's the same people week after or month after month, you know, you just go, you know what? That's not what this is about. This is about helping as many people as possible, not just you. You know, we're not here to be your soul's provider. We gave you a little help once. Thank you very much. There's a lot of other people who need help. We're moving on.
You know, I think the problem in that inherently is part of their slogan, though. It's like showing God's love. Like, some of those people that are just that way, right, everyone else has cut them off too. You know what I'm saying? And maybe not that they catch the full breadth of why they're being cut off. They might not just be, you know, they just might behave in a certain way that just gets them banned from places because they're overbearing. You know, and so, like, you're trying to provide – you know, clothes for people and toys for people and whatever, but you're also trying to show God's love. And so doing that, it implies a certain amount of patience and kindness that I, you know, at times that I don't have. And I think maybe the ladies suffer more than I, you know, they're willing to suffer that type of stuff more than I would. I don't know. It's a bit humbling to watch your wife do the right thing after I've spouted off at the mouth on the wrong thing to do. You know what I'm saying?
I think I do that a lot.
Yeah.
What do you know? Here's the answer.
Here's the thing.
They're like,
man
yeah.
style. We're going to buy a drone. We're going to get a credit card. We're going to buy a drone.
We'll take them down.
Troy, you didn't really weigh in at all. Are you not benevolent?
No way. I am in no way benevolent.
Or are you a thief?
Um, I, see, I agree with you. It's unfortunate you even have to think about that, to be honest. I really, you know, I wish I had some advice on the other way that those all points here made sense. That's just, it hurts my heart that you even have to go into that situation thinking to yourself that there's somebody that could be taking full advantage of what you're trying to do. And I mean, that's where it comes into, we're human. You know, we're evil. We're terrible people as a whole. And
bottom line, do you hand the stuff out or do you investigate or do you just let it go?
Sitting here thinking about it, I would say if you're honestly doing the 70 times 7, I think, you know, maybe I'm going against Dan here, but I think you keep handing stuff out.
What? Troy keeps handing it out. Ben Foost.
Yeah, I start asking some very firm questions. Here's the deal. I mean, I don't like hearsay. I like asking direct questions, right? And I like making direct statements. So, you try to influence people's behavior by, like, doing small things here and there or, like, dainting around it. I don't like that stuff. I'd rather just say, hey, look, you know, we see every month, you know, we're trying to meet needs of a bunch of different people. And if we're giving all the stuff to you all the time, we can't do that. We can't meet a bunch of different people's needs. So, I tell you what, we'll finish out this month. Tell me what you need. We'll get you hooked up. We'll wait 6 months and we'll see how things are going for you.
Part of that's being a good steward. I can't remember if I ever told you about the time I got a letter from Senator Harkin saying this family needs help. And I went over there and they said we need some heart medicine because, you know, I'm going to die if I don't get this. And they had the prescription on the table. And I said, well, is this the bottle you're currently taking? Yeah. And I'm looking at it. It was like 2 months expired. And I'm going, I'm sorry, you're lying to me. This isn't what you're taking right now because it expired 2 months ago. You know, and then, you know, I did a little bit of investigating. And we didn't help him. I'm not going to help you. You lied to me.
Wow.
It was a family obviously in need. I went into their home.
Uh-huh.
They did not have a lot of worldly possessions or anything, but they were just trying to work the system, and so we didn't do anything.
I think it's perfectly okay to say, look, you know, this is what we're going to have to do for the person who said, hey, this person's going to buy something and sell it. I probably just contact the person and say, hey, look, man, do you sell stuff? Because we've got reports that you sell stuff. Here's what they're likely to do is just simply not respond and go away.
Yeah, that's true.
And if they say no, I don't sell stuff. Then I think you check on it. I think you sting.
Oh. You know what?
Because here's the deal: you find it's not going to be very hard, right? You do it once, you find them out, and then they're just done.
Yeah,
and that's fine.
Yeah, see, I toe the line a lot more of being a good steward, right? Like, I mean, we help as many, you know, we help as many people as you can, and like it's worth investigating to see whether how much, you know, if I'm giving a bunch of stuff to you every month and you're fraudulently taking it to somebody, that's a big problem to me because now I'm defrauding the people that are donating. I'm saying it's doing one thing and it's not. It's going somewhere else. And one other gal wrote in today. She's like, and I'll take this and this, and I didn't get my stuff from December like I asked. Like, hey, man.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, of course, now I puffed up against this, too. And the lady's like, no. You know, I'm sure it was a communication issue. I'm like, whatever. Don't assess me on the internet. You don't tell me what you're going to do. And I thought, I've got to get away from this thing. Like my heart is just not in it. I just don't make no sense. So, anyway, fail. Mike, fail. Wife, succeed. Nicely done, wife. All right. Dear Life from the Path, here it is. My boyfriend of 1 year, his name is Eddie, has been invited to a wedding of a waitress who works at a restaurant / bar he frequents.
Always weddings. Go ahead.
I was not invited. Eddie doesn't dance, and has slow danced with me only one time. When I told him I would not appreciate him slow dancing with anyone there, we had a heated argument. Eddie told me I have no right to tell him what to do, and I'm trying to control him. I have run this by lots of people. Dudes and ladies, and they all say it's inappropriate to slow dance with anyone but your significant other, especially when she's not there. I feel Eddie has little regard for my feelings. If he really cared for me, he wouldn't want to dance with anyone else. I am interested in your thoughts. Life from the Path. Hit me.
You said they were married or dating?
Boyfriend.
Boyfriend, yeah. Okay, that's what I'm
saying. Boyfriend of 1 year, Eddie.
Okay,
hold on. Let's answer the basic question. Is it wrong to slow dance with somebody who's not your wife?
Not necessarily.
No.
Your mom, somebody else's yeah. mom. I think it's fine.
I do the dollar dance with the bride usually.
Yeah.
I don't like put my head on her shoulder or nothing. I mean, we're a boob apart. We talk to each other while we're dancing.
That's a little bit different than
that's the thing.
That's probably something.
It's a little legalism to say no. You can never dance with another woman in a slow dance. Because then you're talking about, well, what tempo was slow? Who counts as a woman? Things of this nature.
I personally wouldn't do it, but I agree with you.
Yeah, but yeah, if he's going to a wedding, And she says, look, I don't want you dancing with other women. I feel like that's appropriate. I think she set a pretty reasonable line here. It's, why would he's not allowed to invite her?
That's what I'm saying. Isn't every wedding invitation a plus one?
What?
Like, it isn't always you plus somebody else, right?
Yeah. Unless I
you
think invite it depends on how formal the wedding is. Some are pretty specific.
This does not sound formal / restaurant / bar.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
That's a judgment call.
The bar he frequents.
I might be overstepping my bounds there, but I'm just saying.
I think if it's a pretty informal invitation. I would ask her, hey, can I bring my significant other? Can I bring my girlfriend? And can we dance slowly?
can we slow dance together?
I tell you what, if I ask that, my relationship is I'm a drunk and I attend this bar that this woman waitress is at. And she invites me to her wedding. And I say, hey, can I bring my girlfriend? And they say, no. I'll say, I'll pass.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. There's just no reason to go.
Yeah.
How this has got to be an epic event. Unless he's an alky. He could be. He could be double A's in. That's why he wants to go to the wedding without a significant other so he can get drunksy.
That's kind of a leap, Ben.
I'm assuming it's just about a group of people who just have fun together and like each other. And, hey, come to my wedding, you know.
Open bar.
Okay, so what's our advice then is, look, if you can't bring your significant other, then just say, no, I'm not going.
Yeah.
That's no reason. And the first step is admitting that you have a problem.
Here's what Secular says. If you would like to graduate from girlfriend to fiance, you will stop trying to control him and tell him you hope he has a good time at the wedding.
Oh,
ouch.
Insecurity is not an attractive trait, so calm down and recognize that a dance is only a dance. Ooh, that's what they said in the 50s. Look what it led to.
Yeah.
From your description of Eddie's lack of ability, I seriously doubt he will be a sought-after partner on any dance floor. That's not true.
No.
Quit making slow dancing that like it's a tango. You know what I'm saying? You basically fall against each other and move around. It's not that hard to do.
No.
But
no.
Probably one of the most awkward moments of my entire life was I was probably 19, 20. I was at this bar, and I'm not really a drinker, you know. But there was a few months I would just go and drink a couple, three, whatever. And this gal come up and asked me to dance. And I'm just not a dancer. I just don't dance. And I'm like, well, I really don't dance. And she goes, everybody's looking at me like, well, are you going to dance with her? I'm like, I really don't dance.
Yeah, the answer's no.
And I was like, I can't do this. And then she stood there for a while like, you're breaking my heart. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I really don't dance.
Dan, you're a terrible person.
To this day, I still feel awkward about it. I mean, I could have got out there and wiggled around. And no one would have ever invited me again.
You could have an atrophied left leg and still slow dance.
I just... Yeah.
You're listening to Live from the Path, coming at you every Monday night at livefromthepath.org. And Saturdays on 99.3 KTIA. Hey, be a pal. And go visit our sponsors. Capanna's Coffee and Gelato on Lincoln Way in Ames. Valley Services Cleaning at valleyservices.net. On Purpose Promotions with Jared Roy for all your t-shirt, visor, towel needs. OnPurposePromos.com. And the Eisenhower Team. If you're buying or selling a house, those guys can help you out. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com. If you're hanging out at the podcast, we'll be right back with you. If you're on KTA, we will see you next week. Okay, now
a booba away. A booba away.
I want to know how many of their programs on KTIA talk about going to the bar and dancing. I'm talking to go, wait a minute, this is on a Christian radio station.
You're the closest guy to me. What's the matter?
A booba away. I'm a measurement of distance now. I have no idea whether to be completely offended.
No,
I think it depends
not.
On how the length of distance. How far is a booba?
A booba away.
That's a booba.
What's the conversion rate?
I don't know if you guys saw my face looking at Mike, but a booba away. It's terrible.
What's going on the highlight reel, Troy?
Oh, man. A booba.
Need some drywall. It's going to be about three boobas.
Yeah. Hey, man, how big is this gym? Well, I'd say it's about six or seven boobas. I'm going to start measuring things in myself.
Six boobas on a slow dance.
Okay, hey. My wife says I got to be a booba away from you, so give me a second here.
Give me a second.
Wait, I'd say that's about
right.
A booba, maybe a booba and a half.
Is there a difference between a booba with bad breath and a booba without? So I feel like with bad, it'd give you another
step
six
away.
Inches.
This is a regular booba. That's a booba with bad breath.
I call it the garlic booba.
The garlic booba. All right, I'm sorry to make such a big deal out of that. That just I heard that, and I immediately looked at him just in this disdainful. Oh.
Ah, here's the thing. I've had to repent twice of things that come out of my mouth this week. When I had to text an apology that said, look, I have no control what comes out of my face. I'm sorry. So I feel like I should apologize, but I meant no harm, so I'm not going to do it.
All right, that's fair.
There we go.
Okay.
Dan said booba on internet radio. I feel like, I mean, that's not a violation or anything, but it's certainly,
we're just gonna...
certainly frowned upon.
It's not necessarily a good idea.
I hear you saying you love Jesus, but I'm really missing the fruit.
I heard what you said, Dan.
Now get a booba away from me.
You know what? Scratch that. Make that a garlic booba.
Dear Life from the Path, this one's kind of rough. Our two children, ages 4 and 1, have hyphenated last names. Uh-oh. It works well, and the names sound elegant together. If this is not a prideful household of the year, I don't know which one is. Continuing on. My husband and I are great people. My husband and I have made this known in the family and have discussed it when asked about it by various family members. However, over the last 4 years, our choice has been ignored by two relatives from separate sides of our family. They persist in using only my husband's last name for correspondence and gifts. He has suggested returning the mail as addressee unknown, which I think might come across as rude. Is there any way of having our children addressed correctly by relatives who seem to want to ignore their real names? From New York.
I don't know how to handle this person.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Unhyphen your kids' names and call it a day.
Yeah, what is... Okay, so let me... What's the point of the hyphenated name?
Hold on. Let me give you two clues. One, it's the lady who wrote this letter, right? A guy doesn't go, hey, we should include your last name with the kids, don't you think? Just a case of divorce.
So the hyphenated last name comes about with it when is it, so the mom didn't want to take just the husband's last name and get rid of hers?
Right.
In marriage and with giving the child?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see the point.
It'd be like your wife's name being whatever, Sarah Thompson Bouva. Thompson hyphen Bouva. And then your kids were like, John Bouva Bouva.
John Engeldinger.
No, it would be John Bouva Thompson Bouva.
Yeah.
John Bouva Thompson Bouva.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I think with family, you just have to let some of that stuff go. Let them just be wrong, even though whatever it is you've named your child. I mean, I still get called things that I was called when I was a child. Well, they're all kind of gone now.
Are these family members like blatantly refusing to?
But I had a grandpa that called me Pat. I mean, what are you going to do? That's life.
my mom called my brother's daughter and his daughter. I mean, because she's never remembered her name.
Yeah, Brandon's name is spelled Branden. And we get the O-N, and I don't think anybody gets...
That's normal.
Yeah, I don't think anybody gets upset about it. I would think that you're just getting ridiculous in the name. You're too wrapped up in the fact that it's a name, and you need to calm down, to be
honest.
That's
Thompson hyphen Snodgers. Yeah.
And responding with addressee unknown, seriously?
That's a little rude.
Like, that was a husband's idea?
Yeah, it sounds like a family of people who think very highly of themselves.
Yeah, and their relatives need to really respect who we are.
We're going to prove a point here.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
You know, that's true. My wife's mom always sends stuff in her maiden name. Like, does it... Like,
in your wife's maiden name? Like, you're not married?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Intentionally?
Like, ouch. I think so. I'm pretty sure I should take that
person.
That's a hint.
I was gonna say, that might be a little bit different than just neglecting the hyphenated portion of a name.
But here's the deal. It's just not worth doing. It's not worth doing anything about. Like, especially if it was intentional. It's not like, oh, my mistake.
I'm sure at some point in time I'm going
to
get...
I meant to imply you're a jerk. Yeah.
I'm sure at some point in time I'm going to get some form of mail addressed to me as John Bouva III, and I'm not going to get upset because that's not my real name, but...
Is that just your entertainment name?
Yes. Yes, that's my movie stardom name is John Bouva III.
Yeah, it's just not worth dealing with. Like, get over yourself and quit harassing your kids. Give them a name. Here's the deal. If you can't agree, if you want to share names and, like, you can't agree to one name, pick a new one. Just like, create a new
McLeod.
Something that's a single name. Leave your poor kid alone.
You know, kidding. Steve Dagger. That's what it means. Yeah. Something cool.
Kids should have to learn to use a hyphen until they're 8. You don't want a 4-year-old going, well, my name is Larry Chuck Donaldson.
Why is everybody got to buck the system? Here we go. Secular answer is, before doing it your husband's way, try this. Have another chat with the non-compliant relatives who may come from a different generation. Why she always gives them an out,
it's
like there's some kind of backwoods hillbillies.
Like,
they have no idea how it's going.
You just
don't like
know
the fact that you've done a hyphen name. That's
you don't
it.
Know the culture.
They're protesting. Explain that you gave your children hyphenated last names for a reason, that you want to be equally represented, and the omission of your name hurts your feelings.
Yeah, say that.
If that doesn't work, then go back to plan A, because you don't want your children to be confused. You know what doesn't confuse your children? When you don't give them a hyphenated last name. Are you kidding me?
I think there was one pair of students in my high school that had hyphenated last names. They were never fans of that, so.
Yeah, who would be?
I can't imagine that's a good idea.
Look, my mom wants to be equally important, and so we used her last name, too.
Lame. That seems like a real... Here's the deal. Is if you have to do that to assert yourself into the relationship, you've married the wrong man.
Right.
And fellas, you've married the wrong one.
I don't feel appreciated in this relationship unless my last name is still in there somewhere.
Like, seriously, I would vote. I'm not really overly attached to lineage, right? So, like, I'm just like, oh, the Foost must be represented.
Because look what you've done with the name. You take no pride in it.
Because I think that it's so dumb, I would agree to give my kids a fresh last name before I would give them a hyphenated. Like, I would not call them, like, whatever the hyphen. I would say, we're just going to pick a new one. We'll get a wheel.
Yeah.
We'll go to a bar.
Come on, Rockefeller.
Go to the shoe carnival.
I think of so many... cool names. Come on.
Oh, man. That's the seculars that gave out two very bad pieces of advice.
Yeah. I agree. You want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more.
Okay. Hold on. See. I don't know what that was. My wife and I will be married 25 years and have 3 children. In my family, my dad was the boss. I always was too, but never was involved very much with the kids. My wife never really complained about it. She just wanted to keep the family together. Now that the kids are gone, I realize I should have been a better husband. She mostly ignores me and spends her time with the kids and going places. I feel left out. She doesn't even want to celebrate our upcoming 25th anniversary. Should we? I know my dad drank a lot, and now I find myself thinking often about how it must have been for my mom back then.
What? I feel bad because I feel like I don't follow this question.
I feel like the dude's been absent for 25 years, and now he wants to suddenly take part.
Yeah, he's trying to stir up people to feel sorry for him that his wife doesn't want to celebrate 25 years of crap.
Yeah,
because right? He's not helped raise the children. He's not been involved in the marriage.
My dad was the boss, and that's how I am too.
Yeah. And then I leave.
It sounds like you worked your 40-hour work week or 60-hour work week. You came home and you went straight to the TV.
Yeah,
and were absent entirely in your kid's life and your wife's life, and now you want to be back in it.
Yeah, it sounds like the kids aren't involved either. He just wants to go.
She spends time with
vacation.
The kids, going places, because that's what she has been doing all these years.
So why doesn't he go with the kids too?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's reaping what he sowed.
Yeah, get rid of the milestone. Forget the 25th anniversary thing. And why don't you just start trying to make amends?
Yeah.
Start working on it. You should start
on the next 25 years, call it 1 through 25, an actual
or there
marriage.
Won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take your wife out on a date and see if she even really wants to be in a relationship with you, because it sounds like she's never been in one.
Yeah. And write a letter to your
She
kids.
Married you for a reason. There was Dear probably one point in time some relationship. Get back to that.
We'll use a biblical advice that... Same that Jesus said to the church of Laodicea, go back to what you did before.
Yeah. Right.
And win her over.
Yeah, there's a chance at one point in time you actually had a relationship, and that's one of the reasons she married you. Try and go back to that, build from that. Obviously, you've crumbled that foundation for the past 25 years to the point that she doesn't want to spend any time with you.
Hold on. Is there someone backing up this hyphenated action?
Yeah, so the premise is that what if you are a lady whose name is attached to something from like a business perspective? To keep your name.
Sometimes people will do that, or performers or something will, you know, keep their maiden name.
But what does that have to do with your kids?
Oh, yeah, her Beyonce Knowles Z is how she goes by it now. I don't think that's not true.
Beyonce Knowles Z is how you say
it? She married Jay-Z.
Right.
Our chance at pop culture is bad.
Z is not his last name.
Here we go. Here's secular
Jay-Z
advice.
Knowles, what is it?
I don't know.
Wait, do you have a problem with that?
Yeah, I think I do, actually. You know what? It's only because of the hierarchy of importance. Jesus, spouse, kids, work. Works for, spouses too. Just take the last name. Be done with it. Write some letters, change some contracts, pay $50.
What if you
get a power of attorney?
What if your guy has a crappy last name? Like, what for example?
Like toilet?
Yeah. Yeah, let's say
my name's John Toilet. Marry me.
Hey, I'm Bill Squatter. Nice to meet you.
What about, I guess you don't have to. You don't have to use your name in your business. Like, if you ran a massage institute,
unless you had a toilet place, then I guess the way to go.
John's Toilet Toilets.
Like, if your name was like Jefferson Massage, and then you married like a I don't know, Ted Creeper.
Come on down to Creepers.
I feel like you just have rename it to something that doesn't have your name
in
it.
We have a full body massage of Creepers.
Just call it Jefferson's Massage. You don't have to change the name of the business.
Who are you? Ted Creeper?
I feel like you leave it alone.
Hi, I'm Molly Creeper. It's like, oh, okay.
Molly Jefferson Creeper.
Here's the only reason I can see you want to hyphenate in your name is for convenience or self-glorification.
That seems inconvenient.
Yeah. I just change it. You got married, change it. Just change it. If the tradition was that I took my wife's last name, I'd have done that too. Like, it's not a patriarchal man thing. Like, I just don't just show that you're unionized with the person you're gonna be with for the rest of your life.
Yeah, the hyphen just comes off like a contract. It's like, well, at any given time, we can separate and keep our names, and we'll be fine. Yeah. I didn't have to give up my identity.
Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, what, I didn't do anything, or like, I just happened to be born of some man and some woman who conjugated to produce me.
Yeah, it's
like,
not the,
this
it's,
is not a symbol of who you are as a person. It's just a name.
It doesn't say, and the two became one flesh, except for they kept half their names. You know what I'm saying? You're one person now. Act like one person. Be one person in Christ. Do your job. I'd say no hyphen.
It wasn't Adam and Adam Eve. It was...
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
What was Adam's last name? Apple.
Apple?
Wisdom? Here's secular advice on the marriage action. Ask your wife why she doesn't think that 25 years of marriage is something to celebrate, because it should be. Man, who's writing these columns? She may spend her time with the kids and going places because that is what she has been doing all these years. There's still time for you to mend this marriage, provided you are both willing to work on it. However, it may take the services of a marriage counselor to break the ice.
I'm hesitant on marriage counselors.
Dan?
No, I mean, not...
You've come into question.
I was going to say.
They give some coping skills that I can't give. I mean...
Here's the thing, though. Is I'm afraid that people go to marriage counselors... It gives them an excuse. First of all, if it's a non Christian marriage counselor, sometimes it's an excuse to give up, right? Because if that's the last straw, say we're going to go to a counselor, and if stuff doesn't change, more likely because they're not changing, your underlying problems aren't being dealt with, right? If you don't change, then you go, well, we gave counseling a shot, it didn't work, let's just call it a day, right? Yeah, like somehow the counselor becomes God in this situation and says whether the marriage can sustain itself or not. The basic counselor is going to help you do. I would agree that they give you coping skills, but they're basically giving you a reason to let your guard down on something you otherwise have stood up for in the past, right? If you understand what the marriage, even look at it biblically, right? If you understand what a biblical marriage is supposed to look like, and you are willing to do whatever it takes to get there, and you are willing to be held accountable on doing those things, you shouldn't have a problem. You really shouldn't have an issue.
Yeah,
I think you should be able to work through those things. Now, generally, you go to a counselor because someone's not willing to break. Someone's not willing to say, I'm not willing to submit to you. I'm not willing to forgive this. I'm not willing to move beyond this one thing. Or, you know, when someone tries to hold me accountable, I get defensive. I mean, there are always breakdowns in those three things. And sometimes you have to go to an arbiter simply because it gives you an excuse to bow out gracefully from your position, right? You stop because the counselor told you to stop, not because your pride caused you to do it. Now, that's a bad ultimate consequence, because it means you could have dealt with yourself and you refused to. But, like, I'm not – marriage counselors are helpful, and I think there's people that really need them. But the thing is if that's your first reaction, I think that's a mistake. Like, that's all you're saying is I'm not willing to try on my own. I'm not willing to submit to what my marriage should look like. I'm not willing to fix this. I'm going to go find a referee and then just deal with the consequences. And that's not it's not necessarily always a healthy resolution. Although, again, like I said, I think there are things that ultimately having another party there to help you process, to help guide conversation. Most people just don't know how to talk. They don't know how to deal with each other. They don't know how to have a conversation reasonably. And I think that's part of the issue, is you have someone that kind of referees and say, look, you've overstepped it. I think at the beginning of my marriage, I probably had that same issue. I didn't know when to shut up. I just did not know when to give it. Like, I was right, and I knew it, and I was going to continue to pursue that thing because I need to make sure we got this squared away so this doesn't come up again. She needs to always remember that I was right here. It's terrible. It was just awful. It wasn't about trying to come to the best possible resolution for a marriage. It was just I didn't know how to have a conversation correctly with my wife. And I can understand that people can get ingrained to that extent where they just don't ever move beyond that, because it's more about them than it is about the marriage. They're more about serving them than about serving their wives or their spouse, and they don't move beyond that. And that's when I think someone to help kind of arbitrate that conversation is helpful. But, like, if your first reaction is to say, yep, we need to go to a counselor for our problems, I feel like
I think people, if you're capable of solving your own problems, your marriage will be that much stronger for it. If you need a third party to help you every time you have a spat, I think that's a problem. I don't think you'll never actually learn to live in a marriage. You just learn to depend on someone else to live your marriage for you and solve your problem.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that's why I generally like a Jesus-based counseling opposed to secular-based counseling.
Oh, absolutely.
Is because secular-based counseling will try to arbitrate who's right, and Jesus-based counseling will try to figure out where the sin is and where their separation from God is coming from that's destroying your marriage.
Yeah. I mean, I think most people don't go to a counselor until they've knocked heads so many times and they don't know how to, they're at a wit's end. Mm-hmm. I don't know too many people who just say, oh man, we can't decide how to toast the bread,
There are a lot of people in counseling, Dan. I think you're just not running into them. Like, we are highly counseled, highly drugged.
Well, that's
nation.
True, a lot of people.
People don't come to you for counseling, Dan.
I know, I tell them not to. I'm not a counselor. I'll say, I will listen to you and I will give you scripture.
I like Dan's Jesus-based advice. Yeah, sorry. I only talk from the Bible. I don't want to know anything about your marriage. Here's the deal.
I can't. I don't
one
do
of you is
stuff.
Sinning,
I'm like,
and one of you is not forgiving.
Does bother you? Stop it.
Read James, for heaven's sakes.
No.
You were listening to Life for the Path. Hanging out on the podcast. That's it, though. We're ending it.
Yeah. Yep.
The music's the ender.
Good show.
That's it, Ben.
No, it's not over yet.
It's not?
No.
Hey, seriously, if any of you guys are doing something this week, go to hit Capanas. Go to that Capanas Coffee and Gelato. Get some
delicious.
Yeah.
Trust me.
I almost went up today.
Look
I'm
at me.
I'm going to go in April.
I know
we'll
food, guys.
Okay.
That's terrible to say,
I'm
but
fasting.
I know it.
I can't do it.
Oh.
I'm not doing sweets. I'm not doing stuff. I'm
going to Capanas.
I'll go with you.
All right, let's do this.
I want to go up to this.
Let's do it live from there some night.
It's a relatively, we'll see what we do.
It's kind of a small joint.
Yeah, it is kind of a small joint.
There's a corner we could, there's like a couch area we could broadcast
from. Yes,
there
is.
Yeah. We might put people up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm convinced of that.
They may not be beneficial.
Yeah,
to
I was
going to
say, I can't imagine that's going to be great.
We'll start a coffee
on
shop
scene.
Fight.
We could get, okay, what if we show up and we put a sign up that says, they didn't agree to this.
This
unless
is not
things,
them.
Unless
this
things
is not
start to go
business.
Well, and then we'll just take the sign down. That seem fair?
I feel like we should probably have that sign printed up because we'll need it some other time as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Well,
they did not agree to this.
I still think we ought to get them coffee mugs. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Are we?
It's happening. Yeah. You're listening live from the path.
What do I know?
We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Have a good week.
We need to stay a boomer away from that place.